Welcome to Inclusive Career Conversations, the go-to podcast for HR leaders, talent acquisition specialists, and D&I champions. I'm your host, Zoe Hayden-Jones, and each episode, we'll dive deep with thought leaders and trailblazers, uncovering actionable insights that empower you to create a more inclusive environment for everyone. I'm so glad you're here. Let's do this. So before we dive into this episode, I just want to say that I think everyone needs to listen to this app, whether you have dyscalculia, whether you struggle with maths or know someone that does. I think the more we know about every neurodiverse condition or diagnosis, the better. The more inclusive we can make the workplace, the more we can understand and support people during interview process and, you know, once they're in their role. So you will learn all about M's top tips for supporting candidates at the recruitment stage, right down from asking if they needed an additional support, but really drilling down, creating a list and then putting in brackets what each one is. You know, someone might not have know about dyscalculia, they might not be diagnosed, but they might really struggle with numbers and it might trigger something where they think, oh, okay, what is this? And then they might let you know. And M talks a lot about how to really, really take a step back and consider what you're writing on a job advert. You know, does this job really require a degree? And she gives some example terminology that you can use instead. So it's a really, really interesting episode. Em is insightful, she's honest, and she has some top tips that I think everyone will benefit from. So enjoy the episode. So welcome to another episode of Inclusive Career Conversations. I'm delighted to welcome this week's guest. We have Em Ledger, who is an exec product manager. It's not even a mouthful, but we're recording early at the BBC. Welcome to the podcast, Em.
Thanks, Zoe. Nice to be here.
It's such a pleasure to see you again. You've been on our sister podcast, Jobs for Women, and we met at an event, and you are big into sharing your story and advocating for diversity, equality, inclusion. So it's a pleasure, and I'm excited to delve into our conversation today. So talk to us, just intro, what a great job. What do you do at the BBC?
It's one of those jobs, I think, when you start talking to people and tell them what you do, it's just a bit like, unless you're in tech, what does that even mean? Especially product, because I think people think that you're on some sort of production line, like a tangible product. And obviously in tech, it mostly just means real estate, pretty much. You'll be looking after a certain digital product, and you're kind of the subject matter expert or the go-to person for that particular product. So for me, I look after sign-in, registration, verification and platforms at the BBC, which is a horizontal slice, if you want. So you kind of have iPlayer, News, Sport, you know, all the kind of big apps that users are familiar with. And we provide those journeys underneath all of them to power them. So, what I do is work with developers, engineers, QAs, you know, and we all kind of come together to make sure that the journeys are the best they can be, future-proofed, using the best technologies, that type of thing, and keeping them run smoothly for people. So, yeah, that's what I do.
That sounds like a great job. I think I'd love to do your job. So what's your background? Tech? Is your background tech?
Nope. So I actually did a degree in film and media production. So I got into tech sort of, I'm one of those people that say they fell into tech or got into tech accidentally. I really wanted a creative career, but obviously very hard to do, especially if you don't have financial backing or that sort of comfortable background. I'm very much working class. I just sort of fell into it because I was really struggling to get kind of paid work in the creative fields, and was actually working in retail and discovered that there was a gap in the market. And I sort of put my entrepreneurial hat on and thought, could I do this? Can I, you know, make a go of that? And actually, you know, taught myself how to build a website and set up an e-commerce store. And this was in the time of EPOS systems. It was a while ago. It was in 2004, I think. So, was it 2000? No, it wasn't. This is what we're going to talk about today, dyscalculia and how I can't do numbers. It was 2010. That's when I set up the business. And so that kind of got me into tech. purely accidentally, I was thinking about retail and business at that point, and then realized in a similar way that, you know, I was looking into film and media production, I already had quite a technical brain. So it sort of came together, and I realized you can actually do a technical role and be creative in the tech space, which I never actually realized was a thing. I thought it was very much, you know, kind of coding, which a lot of people do, right? From the outside, I think the tech is all about coding. And it's not. I've never written a line of code in my roles, and I probably will never do that. So,
do you know, that is such a refreshing way, excuse me, to look at it, that almost coming together. You don't have to lose your creative side if you work in tech. It's like this. How Absolutely. Can we bring our skills together? I love that. And I think people listening, it'll be a bit of an eye-opener that perhaps we have this preconceived idea that, yeah, we need to be techie, and then it's almost scary. And, you know, there's a lot of conversation at the moment in the media, obviously, about retaining like women specifically in the workforce and career transitions and using all the skills that we have, man, woman, whatever gender, but you know, going into roles that they might not have thought they could do years ago, or that the degree doesn't fit into. So I think your story is really refreshing that that you've not written a line of code, so you don't need to, anyone listening, that's, you don't need to be able to do that. That's brilliant. And yes, like you said, we're here to talk about dyscalculia. No, said it wrong.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
is it? Anyone listening, I had to write it down phonetically. I don't know why I've got a block in my brain. Talk to us about that.
Sure. So I think it's one of the things of, you know, the kind of conversations that are happening at the moment about neurodiversity in particular. It's one of the things on the list that people are less familiar with. Dyscalculia is probably easily described as, or most easily described as, the mass version of dyslexia. So there's a real struggle of just not just the like visualizing of math, in a very kind of pure sense, like adding up on the spot, for example, things like that. It's also concepts to do with like kind of numeric concepts. So things like telling the time on a clock face, organizing your time. So, you know, I have 50 minutes to do this thing and kind of working backwards. It's things like not kind of grasping even numbers, odd numbers. It's hard to, when you are a person who just has this thing, it's hard to kind of explain what it means to other people, because you've just done it naturally. But they're some of the things that when I have conversations with people and through your life, you kind of realize, oh, my brain's working very differently to how you're doing it. And it is things like that. So the examples that I always give are, like for me, if I want to think about an odd or an even number, I think about going with my friends to Alton Towers. And you can tell I did this when I was a teenager. It's very much a teenage thing. But it was always, if we went on this particular ride where there's two seats, and there was three of us, one would be the odd one out. And that's how I always have to remind myself what an odd number is. It just doesn't stick. There's no way of it sticking.
Wow. I love that you have something that you can go back to. And yeah, teenage. So when were you diagnosed?
So just after I left secondary school and went into sixth form. So wow. It was very much, to kind of, I guess, paint the picture a little bit more on that one, I did pretty well on my GCSEs across the board. So to say again, working class background, I grew up in a house where we had no books. You know, my dad left school at 13, couldn't read or write. There's a whole thing there that was kind of working against me, but it was very clear that I was succeeding. I was an overachiever personality type, and I got really good grades, and I tried hard, and I was very conscientious. So my teachers were a little bit like, what's going on here? Because I failed maths and science GCSEs. Like spectacularly so, you know, which is jarring on all the other things that I was doing. Like, for example, I did business studies and I got an A in that. So it's like all these other things, what's going on? So, you know, I was in the bottom set for math, which you're not set to succeed if any teachers are listening. Putting people in the bottom set, people just get forgotten about. They just kind of put you there with all the naughty kids who don't want to learn. It's very hard. So I didn't really stand a chance. So after that, as they do a lot now in colleges and sixth forms, they'll get you to try and retake it, because obviously, you know, math, science and English are the ones that they really want you to get a GCSE in. So I did a few more retakes and it was clear, you know, I was doing my A levels. I was in a really good school as well at that point. I'd managed to get in. And yeah, something is not quite right. And that's when the conversation started happening, that there's something there. But again, people don't know what it is. People didn't kind of openly understand that this was a thing. They just thought I was stupid.
I'm glad in a way. Well, I'm sorry that you failed so badly, but that does put a massive microscope on it, doesn't it? That you're getting an A in business studies. And this is why I think conversations like this are so important, because the more we talk about it, the more other people will be like, oh, that sounds like me, or my child maybe, you know, is similar to you or has a similar story. Has it affected your career today?
Yes, I would say so. Yeah. I guess you don't know about the missed opportunities, do you, right? So there's certain things where you think, I think that might have been an issue there. There was one particular interview that I had where it was talked about, which was great. I think it was a real turning point for me. So, you know, with any kind of neurodivergence, people will sort of have that inner dialogue to be like, do I disclose before an interview, right? Because there's a lot of preconceived ideas about this sort of thing. And if I say it up front, is it going to hinder my chances? Do I take a risk and hope that they don't ask me something that makes it really obvious? But yeah, so for years I just didn't disclose. And I had this particular interview, a job that I really, really wanted. It was a step up for me. It was when I was going into senior product roles. And they gave me a mass test on the spot. So we're on Zoom. There was me, two other people. And you kind of expect some kind of challenges on a call. It was second stage, right? We'd done all the usual fluff. And the second one was, right, we're going to give you some scenarios to work through. And often it'll be, you know, prioritization or things like that in product. And it wasn't. It was a, we've got X amount of calls coming to the contact center. We're trying to make a digital first journey. And it was just work it out on the spot. And they wanted to see my learning. Do you know, like how I did it? Which again is, if you were going into a math type role, show how you're doing something, pretty standard, same in GCSEs and that type of thing. But I wasn't expecting it. And the feeling, similar to, I think there's a lot more voices out there talking about dyslexia, but there's kind of like a freeze and a cloud and you just don't know. And I think, yeah, you're sort of on the spot, there's a panic. And I just really wanted this job, and I just felt so disappointed and sad, because I knew not only was I not able to do this, which is going to be a, you know, an X marker on the sheet, but it's super embarrassing. Do you know, because people do look at you like you're stupid, and it's not a nice feeling. And it takes me back to those times when I was a kid, when, you know, people would just be like, what are you doing? Like, that doesn't even make sense. And it is, it's rough. So in that, you know, in that scenario, what was a positive is the person that I'd sort of originally had a chat with, who would have been my boss, and the first interview went so well, like he was fully expecting me to just sail through the second one and just give me the job, basically. He was like ticking a box. And so when it didn't go so well, he actually rang me himself. He was like a director at this very big company, and he rang me and said, can I just ask, like, what happened? Because I, you know, I was like, she's my gal, we're doing this. Like, I'm going to hire her. And I just said, well, like, I'll tell you this now. And I explained it all. And he was like, I've never heard of that before. I would have never known how to accommodate for it. I'm so glad we had this conversation. I want to offer the job anyway.
And wow.
Like, you know, that sounds ridiculous. Like, but I did actually go and work there. I worked there for a while. And yeah, just how easy that was. I just didn't think that we could have these conversations so openly. And to be honest, I think it is on the individual as well. Is everybody going to be the same as he was? You know, would it have been a different story if I disclosed it right at the beginning? For example, would a recruiter just go, nope, right? If someone is saying someone who is strong in these areas but doesn't really think about it. So like in my area, data is massive. If you think, oh, this person's got dyscalculia, they're probably not going to do maths, X amount, not even shortlist them. You just don't know. It's such a tricky area of deciding, do I disclose, do I not?
Yeah, it's really hard to navigate. My friend has a hidden disability and she went right through for a massive entertainment brand, like 10 rounds, and disclosed her disability in the last stage and was pretty much ghosted and had this one-liner generic feedback. Just absolutely horrific treatment, you know, going through and spending all that time. And I think what I want to pull from your story is, what a brilliant position that you knew the person, that you had that pre-existing relationship, that he was smart enough to pick up the phone. Because can you imagine the changes that he's made to his recruitment processes, that awareness piece? But for the other people that don't have that relationship, can you imagine how many people have not got a job because of that, because they haven't spoken up and then they've, you know, not done well in that second interview? There must be so many cases of that. Is there anything you think companies can do? To be more inclusive in that process? I mean, you know, when you just said then about the, you know, stating it and it's on the individual and knowing it just depends on the company. It's kind of like, maybe if a company wants you to be honest, putting it on the advert, like, please let us know, if, you know, a tick box. Is it, what do you think about that?
So I do think we're seeing it a lot more now. Like, I do see a lot more adverts saying, you know, if you have any specific requirements or you want to let us know about anything that we can help you with or better prepare for, and that type of thing, like any assistance, great. The thing I think the conversations that I'm keen to have in the DEI space is, it's, you've got to follow it up with actions, right? And you've got to have accountability. So it's okay saying, yes, we welcome people from all backgrounds, but you've got to make your environment a place that they can thrive. Right. So it's a two-part thing. I do see more people advertising it, but I think, do you understand what it means? And if you get someone through, that it almost encourages more disclosing. Are you actually going to deal with that in a way that is respectful? Right. Are you going to be accommodating? Are you going to understand what accommodations are needed? And then are you going to pass that on to hiring managers? Because there's an education piece there. You are having to take that on to do the right thing. And I think, if we can have more people actually doing the tangible actions and sticking by it. I think the other thing to note as well is, people sometimes don't know what these things are. We're all just learning. You know, a lot of people at the moment are having, you know, on huge wait lists for things like ADHD, for example, or ASD. People who've lived their lives a very specific way and didn't really realise this was a thing. So I think there are also things where people may be going into careers where they don't understand or realize that this kind of special quality that they have is a thing that they could actually have further support for. They don't have to kind of cross all these hurdles unnecessarily. You know, I think there's a big piece there in that as well. Like the amount of people, and you touched on it earlier, who have conversations with me and go, I think that's me. I think, like, that's how I can't do maths. Like, that's how I work. And they've never heard of it before. So there's something, there's a lot of things in the mix. I think we've got a long way to go.
Yeah, there's a big education piece. I really like, what I'm hearing you say is, you know, it's not just, so the recruitment stage is so important, pre-recruitment, obviously during the process, but afterwards, like, once that person is in that organisation, how are they going to be supported? And then educate line managers. I did an amazing interview for the podcast with a coach who was diagnosed autistic last year. I think she's in her 30s, and it was eye-opening, and it was amazing. And she said it's kind of like she works on training leaders that have fallen into leadership, so like managers that have become leaders, into becoming real leaders and owning it. And her whole approach is that human element. You are, you know, you're managing a team. What's the human element? And I think part of that is that training piece for line managers to know their team inside out, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses, what their superpowers are. Mm-hmm. But that's a piece in itself, isn't it? Like, we're not all born brilliant managers and we don't all have the knowledge. And I think the D&I piece is just constantly evolving, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So have you had any sort of support mechanisms in place in your current job or previous jobs, or have you just cracked on?
Oh, it's just cracked on. That's just a bit of me, to be fair. But in terms of the dyscalculia stuff, like in my current role, I'm a lot more open about it now, especially I think once you get through that hurdle of, please just give me the job, I really want the job, don't think that I can't do data, please. Once you get past that and you're able to sort of show what you can and can't do, or like, in fact, that's probably not the best use of language, where you struggle or where things are not quite as accessible to you as maybe your colleagues, I'm a lot more open about it. And I find that that just takes such a weight off, right? Because data is a big part of my job. And, you know, I wanted to, there's an element of like trying to prove yourself, you know, I can do this. You, to line management, you don't need to worry about me or whatever. Like, because I think, again, if you've never worked with somebody that has something like this, you might be worried. You might be like, took a risk here. Like, what are they going to do? So, yeah, I've kind of got a good working relationship with a lot of colleagues who kind of will see, I've got strengths in this area, I've got some struggles maybe here, and we understand where it's best to break things down. So when we've got a piece that is, you know, particularly data heavy, then I won't even have to ask anymore. They'll say, right, I'll grab that bit. Do you want to do the analysis? Or, do you know, like, do you want to do that part? And it's just easier. And it's just so much of a relief. And I think having your colleagues, not just your line manager, know these things also helps. So there's always going to be a situation, especially in a leadership role. So, you know, for me, I join calls every week, like a weekly business review. There's sort of senior directors on there. There's like a huge amount of people from all different areas. And you have a slide and you sort of showcase what you've been doing in your area and how you're hitting targets. And you have to talk through data. So for me, I have a way of doing that, right? I'll write, it'll be all words on my page. And it'll be numbers on the screen, but I will read it from a page and I'll memorize it because it's words. I know it sounds mad, but that's the thing. So I can't look at the screen. I have to look at my notes. But the problem is, if anything comes up, so someone will say, oh, you see that figure there? Like, what does that mean though in terms of this? And if we had this, and it'll just be full blank. And at that point, any of the colleagues that I work with usually jump straight in without me even having to ask. I'll be like, and they'll already be in, which is, again, very reassuring. There's been times when there hasn't been, and I've had to say, I'm going to need to take that away. And if they look a bit funny or whatever, then I might actually disclose on a call, because then it's even more people in that web that are aware and maybe not going to ask you on the spot. So, yeah, I think the more comfortable that you get with disclosing, the easier it does feel, because you realize it's other people's problem and issue, it's not mine, you know?
I think it's so powerful hearing you share those conversations, because people that might have been, we talk about masking a lot on the podcast, like, mm-hmm. you know, we hide away, maybe people please. So just those examples might help anyone listening or anyone that's managing someone, you know, you just being, I love, and how that's like an insight into your brain for me, that you would write it down in words. That's like, I love that. Yeah. That's your way. And I think you sharing that, these stories will help so much, because, and that whole piece of, I need to take that away, and your colleagues jumping in, that is just brilliant. That's what you need. And the more, like you say, if you're on a call and you just lay it down to them, you're just helping ignite those conversations and share that knowledge. So that's brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. I know we've got to wrap up soon. Are there any, I mean, I don't know if there's an answer to this. Are there any tech or apps or anything that you use that help you manage your dyscalculia?
Do you know what? I don't use anything specifically. So if there is anybody else who's like, mate, that's me and I use this thing, like, please do reach out to me. But no, I have my ways of doing things, you know, like I said, with the sort of adjustments, the writing the words, the Alton Towers example. I have different things as well with how I work things out in terms of if I don't have, I mean, really in the modern day, you tend to have 24-hour clock, you know, like on my watch, I would not have a clock face. but things like that, you know, it makes me do things like, it's 18 minutes to... People look at like you're an alien. There are just things that I've made adjustments to that just make things easier for me and make me communicating with people a little easier. But no, I don't use any specific thing. I'll tell you what I don't use, and that's Excel.
I bet.
Is it dyscalculia nightmare?
Oh my gosh, I can't even. Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, it's a nightmare for me. And then final question, what advice, have you got any advice for employers that have no idea about dyscalculia and that are listening and thinking, I need to do something about this. What any tips or advice before we finish?
Yeah, I think asking outright is a good thing. So, you know, if you have those kind of generic messages that say, you know, do you have any assistance that you would like? I think actually calling things out, because sometimes people will Google it, right? And if you're, especially in a STEM area, you know, and I think just by default STEM, it has science, tech, engineering and maths in the title. That's quite scary for someone who struggles with numbers and numeric concepts. Again, calling it out, saying, if you have these things, or, you know, being a bit more open about it, or even just saying dyscalculia brackets, struggle with numeric concepts, that type of thing. This is not, you know, a deal breaker, or just being a bit more open about it would be awesome. And I think a big thing is considering, similar to, you know, if we're trying to be more inclusive with job ads, and we say things like, you need a degree and you don't, like, really consider pulling it right down and trying to find the right candidate by saying, we welcome people who have these sets of skills. It's not necessarily what score you got in your GCSEs 20 years ago, right? You know, you need to be more open. I think there's something there as well in thinking about what tasks you're going to do on your interview phases. Yes, you might need someone to do data. Do you really need them to do it on a call? Can they take it away and prep? If I'd have prepped it, I'd have been fine. I have ways of doing things. I just can't do it on the spot. You know, giving people advance warning of what a task is going to be. If it is a specific task like reading or writing that lots of people struggle with, the numbers, especially of dyslexia, are huge. Giving people stuff in advance in itself, in a scenario like an interview where anxiety could be high, will just alleviate that so much. So I think things like that, stepping it through, being really clear and open about it, addressing those key concerns, and actually trying to make people kind of set for success. Really, in an interview, both sides want it to work, right? Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be kind of catching people out, putting things in that people are going to find hard. Let them actually succeed.
Brilliant advice. Honestly, that was fantastic. Thank you. Thanks so much for coming on. You are such a pleasure to speak to. And I think you've just got great advice and just brilliant stories. I know you've been through the ringer with them, but I think the way you're so open to sharing your story will help so many people. If people want to connect with you, where can they find you?
Oh, LinkedIn. I'm all over LinkedIn. I love it. Yeah, that's probably the best place.
Awesome. And I'll put the link in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Zoe.
I hope you enjoyed that episode with Em Ledger talking all things dyscalculia. And if anything, I hope it's just opened up your eyes to dyscalculia. For a lot of people that I've spoken to about this, they weren't aware of it. But the stats speak volumes. And we have created a free guide, which includes top tips for supporting people in the workplace with dyscalculia. And we've also created an infographic that you can share around your organization. So just head to the show notes on this podcast and we will send that guide straight to you. If there's anything you want us to cover on the podcast, please reach out on hello@jobsforneurodiverse.co.uk. We are always open to your suggestions. And the feedback so far on the podcast has been absolutely phenomenal. So we are so grateful that you are here and that you are supporting us and you are listening. Did you know that one review is the equivalent to 1,000 downloads? So I have one request before I leave you. If you could head to the podcast player that you listen on and drop us a review and a rating, the team and I will be so grateful. And it means that we can bring even more incredible guests, deliver more episodes, and help you create an inclusive workforce in your organization. So that's it for this week. Take care of yourselves and we will see you next time.